Okay, welcome back to 2S, the Horror Quarters Podcast.
Yes.
We are welcoming back our good friends, Vito and Spawn.
Yes.
And then a good friend of mine who I've met over the years at Monsterpalooza and a couple other conventions, Corey.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for coming out, Corey.
Thanks for bringing me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So we're here to go over the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Break down the Texas Chain,
franchise.
Absolutely. So, big fan of it.
Yeah, I'm going to throw it at you guys.
Yeah. And we'll Texas see what Chain happens. Has been one of my favorite franchises, even though the timeline's like super schizophrenic. Oh, that's beautiful. Aww. Look at that. The timeline's super schizophrenic, and right. I get it. But my early memories of Texas Chainsaw is the good old days, like in the video store. Like, to rent Texas Chain, it was like kind of like a rite of passage, like Faces of Death. Like, Texas Chain, Faces of Death were like the real ones, you know, the real yep. horror. They were like that we, you know, us 80s
that was a benchmark.
Kids thought were real. So when you, it was like a rite of passage, so to speak. Oh, I've rented Texas Chain. I've seen Texas Chain. Like, I think back when I first saw Texas Chain was at this video store in Queens. I think it was on Bell Boulevard in Queens on 73rd.
Yeah.
It's called Video Zone. And that was my favorite of all the mom and pop shops in the 80s. That spot in Queens was my fucking favorite because it had the best wrestling. Because, you know, I'm a big wrestling fanatic. So it had the best wrestling videos. Like, I mean, it was a wall of wrestling videos from NWA, AWA, which was hard to find, and WWF, of course, their Coliseum yeah. video. And then they had the immaculate horror section. And so there was a place in Groton, Connecticut, where I lived at in Connecticut. It had a good wrestling section. Oh, no, I'm sorry, good horror section. And then it was a place in the Bronx where I lived at by my grandma's house off of Ogden, had a good wrestling section. But this place was that perfect hybrid. It had the best horror and the best wrestling section. So this was my favorite go-to. And I remember our family rented Texas Chain. It was me, my cousin, my grandpa's house, rest in peace to my gramps. And then we rented it, and it was like so real, so grainy, and I felt like I was watching a snuff film when I first saw it. Like, that, those are my earliest memories of Texas Chain 1. What about you, Vito?
Similar to Spawn here, except for my video store was at the local Albertsons. For those of you who don't know, you get your free cookie when you were little in the 80s. And then you go get your fried chicken and your soft-baked French bread. And then right there, by the exit, was a video store. So when Pops would go get lunch and I have to be chewing on my cookie, I'd be in there in the horror section of the video store inside Albertsons, and I too would be immaculated with the Texas Chainsaw videotape. Now, did Pops rent it for me? Sadly, no. So I didn't get a chance to see it until I was a little bit older on cable, but I would sit there and stare at that
so
cover
Texas
for
Chain
hours.
One was on cable back in the day? Because I don't remember one being on cable.
Back in the 90s.
Okay. Oh, 90s. Okay.
Back in the 90s, but I would sit there and just stare at the cover, and in your mind, just make up your own story based on a fucking cover.
Right.
And it served me well until I saw the real deal. And you know what? I agree with you. You know, there was a movie called Summer School, you see, with Mark Harmon?
Yes.
Where even Texas Chainsaw is what you have to see.
Right.
Before you see anything else.
Right.
And that movie did not let me down. I agree with you. This documentary style, the direction was very documentary-like. The intensity, the insanity.
Yep. What did you see, Corey?
Okay, like you guys, my first experience was on home video. Back home in Wilmington, Delaware, there was a place called Video Frequency, and they were a mom and pop chain, and they were in the game at least 4 years before Blockbuster came onto the scene. And we had gotten our first VCR, and I think I was around about 13, picked it up, and I was just blown away by it. I mean, when it comes to the horror icons, the two that have always scared me the most has been Michael Myers and Leatherface. Freddy and Jason, not so much, you know, but everyone has their own that they go to.
Yep.
I will say, though, too, this movie's legacy, it's really interesting because it's, when you look at the, you know, the big franchises, it's below Halloween, Elm Street, and Friday, but I think it's above, and I even say it's kind of below Saw, but it's above Hellraiser and Phantasm. And it's not throwing any shade against those, because those are great franchises and they're on their own selves. There are people out here that love this franchise. I mean, talking about big people. From what I remember, Spielberg is a big fan of it. That's why he wanted to work with Toby on Poltergeist. Also, too, if you guys haven't seen it yet, there's a wonderful horror movie in the theaters right now called X by Ty West, I think.
I'm looking for that one.
Big fan of that guy.
Ty, if you're listening, man, kudos to you. X is a love letter to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
You could tell this guy loves what Tobe Hooper did. It is such a love letter. It's not, it's a creepy movie. It's not really scary in a sense of jump scares, right. But it's a very creepy and very unsettling movie. In a way, like
that's the style.
Just like Texas Chainsaw.
Yes.
Well, no,
It's so beautifully shot. I mean, I can't wait to see the next thing that Ty West does. I'm not trying to go off the subject, but if you're a Texas Chainsaw Massacre fan, you owe it to yourself to go see X.
I've been wanting to see that. What about you, Iron Mike? When did you first see Texas?
I was young. I remember seeing it. I couldn't even call an age on it. I don't know, maybe 11, 12. I don't even know right. when it was. But I remember it was unsettling. That was a good word that you right. used there, because especially the kills with the sledgehammer, whatever he had.
Right.
Yes.
It wasn't as beautiful as, you know, like a
later
machete
on.
Or right. like a butcher knife that you're kind of used to in these movies. That, to me, was more real life. Like,
right.
That's what made it, you know what I mean? So unsettling. Like, it was, yeah. Because the way it was shot, like a documentary, and you said to me, it felt like a snuff film.
Sure.
And it was more realistic. Like, one blow's not going to kill you. She's there suffering, you know what I mean?
Right. Shaking, you know?
Yeah. Well, like that opening scene when you first see Leatherface, there's no music, no
music,
warning,
no
music. Nothing.
Right.
Just that sound
opens
bite, though.
He just opens that, the little
right.
He just opens that silver gate and this last dude.
Yeah.
Kirk, I think it was.
Yeah, Kirk. I think Kirk yeah. was the first one to get it.
Yep. Yeah.
I was going to say, too, going back to the influence of this movie, even in animation, I don't know if people realize or not, were any of you fans of Batman the Animated Series?
Of course, the biggest.
Okay, so now remember when it first came on Fox?
Right.
And, you know, you had the animated series in its blue and gray costume. And then right. then towards the mid to late 90s, they had the Kids WB on Saturday morning.
Right. And they had
Superman the Animated Series. Right. Well, what they did was Bruce Timm was asked to do another season of Batman to go along with Superman.
Yeah.
So what they did was, to separate it from the original episodes that came on Fox, they redesigned a lot of the characters.
Right. Joker looked different. Scarecrow looked different.
And that's what they're going. One of the biggest ones was Scarecrow.
Yeah.
And they said, because I listened to the commentary, they were inspired by Leatherface to redesign the Scarecrow in Batman Animated Series. And if you can pull up Batman the Animated Series yep. Scarecrow version 2, you'll see it looks like they were looking at the Gunnar Hansen it's really creepy looking for a kids.
Yeah, no, it's a great
for a kids cartoon too. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, even
I used
even,
to watch it at I was like 19, 20 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, I mean, too. I was in my 20s, love it. And that version is even more unsettling than Cillian Murphy's. Not to knock, because you know I love them. You know that version from Bale and yeah. from Christopher Nolan, but the animated series with the noose, the rope around his neck, right. and everything. And
I love that
big long hat. Oh man, I was like, you guys are allowed to get away with this on
right.
a kids cartoon.
it's
like, so this movie's influence, it's still out there. People love this film, and it was just a few years ago. Wasn't it indoctrinated into the American Film Institute? It's considered a national treasure. I forgot the exact name, but every year they pick a certain amount of films. I'm pretty sure Texas is in that.
I
have to look that up. I'm surprised only because I know that was funded by, I believe I'm not wrong, it was produced by Brian Stinn
yep.
Production, which was basically funded by
the mob.
You know, and it was so low budget that the actors had to take a deal to get X amount of points. Like, after everything was paid for, they were supposed to get paid. And based on the documentaries that I seen, they still yet to have gotten paid.
Well, nobody knows how much that movie made, because
yes.
here's the thing. Like,
that's what I was going to ask you. Like, was it a giant? Was it a success? Was it a
nobody
word of mouth?
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows
because the money. Yeah, they were taking so much money. I mean, theoretically, this film may have made more than Halloween or even Blair Witch as an independent
horror movie.
The numbers
will never,
but we'll never know,
because the way it was dealt with. And I believe Bryanson also did some porn films too. It was just money funded by the mob, and so none of the books were accurate, so we'll never know exactly yep. how
is
much.
Is that why a lot of streaming platforms have it? Because a lot of times, you know, they'll get the rights of a certain movie, but it's on Shudder, it's on Tubi, Texas Chain's like all over the place.
Hard to say. I think, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Kim Hinkle and I do believe Tobe Hooper, when he was alive, still had some producer credit in it, so they were still able to get have some rights to it. But don't quote me on it. I may be wrong in that. But when it comes to the rights, it's hard to say. It's like, been put out by many different companies. I don't know if it fell into public domain or
right. That's what I'm saying. Public domain.
I thought it was under New Line original, not the Platinum Dune ones, but even I think that's under New Line also. I think the whole franchise.
And unless New Line's bought it, I can't comment one way or another. But it was basically Brian Singh was independent, so who's hard to say how that rights of that would work in terms of salesmanship of that, because again, the owners of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But here's the thing with this movie, though. I always say, and I still feel this way, It's the most self-defeating horror movie ever made. Because people can't get past the title. You still got people today that will not watch this movie because they've already built that movie up in their head. They think that it's a bloodbath and it's intestines. Right. And I try to tell people, you got more body parts in Starship Troopers.
Right, than you do in Texas Chainsaw 1974.
You got more blood and guts in your average Rambo movie right. than you have Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Is it scary? Yes. Yeah. Which is its job. It's a horror movie.
Right.
But is it a bloodbath? No. But you got
something. That's what makes it so brilliant is that there's not a lot of blood in Texas Chainsaw 74.
No, but your imagination.
But it's the imagination.
Your imagination, because the acting of the intensity. Right. It's the movie is so insane, and you see the motions of the things that are going on. Your mind, when you talk about it, and when you remember and recollect it, you think you see more than what there was, and it truly is not a very bloody film. Is there moments of blood? Yes, but mostly towards the aftermath of the injuries. Even with the head injury, it was. I mean, you see some blood, but not as much as you think.
Right.
When you see the murder of Franklin,
it was bloodier than I remember it. But like when I was a kid, and I would think back to it, like in my teenage, I'm like, that's like the bloodiest movie I've ever seen.
But you know,
when I go back, I'm like, there was no blood.
No, well, but the imagery though,
the imagery.
You don't even see any blood with Franklin. Really, the most blood you really see is
which is my favorite kill in the franchise. By the way,
the most blood you see is really probably caked on Sally at the end when she's sitting in the back of the pickup truck. It's like that
was amazing.
That's it, man. I mean.
So the opening scene is when they pick up the, well, after you see all the body parts and everything, I guess someone was playing in the, and I think it was probably the hitchhiker, right? That Nubbins was playing in the bodies. And then all of a sudden, they pick him up for some reason. And
he was hitchhiking.
Yeah, he was hitchhiking. I guess that, you know, that was a thing in the
70s. Yeah, it made sense. I mean.
Right.
It was coming off the hippie era where it was cool to give someone a ride.
Yeah. Right. So it made more sense back then than it would if they did a 2022 version.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Or 2017 when they picked up that hitchhiker. I'm like, come on. Or 2013, I mean, sorry. But yeah, so when they pick him up and he's just creepy right off the bat. You know what I'm saying? And he was like.
Oh, he was unsettling, dude.
He was very unsettling immediately. But it wasn't like, kind of like, and I love Chop Top, but Chop Top was a little over the top. You know, no pun intended. But like, he was like. Like
Nubbins was just fucked up,
right? Okay, so you're from New York, right? And you've been on the train, and you know that crazy person that's talking to themselves, or that crazy person that's on the train that's making everyone uncomfortable.
Yeah, you don't look at
him. And that's how you don't make eye contact with him. And that's how Nubbins was. That's what was the brilliant of what was the actor that played Nubbins?
I forgot his name, and he's done some other things, and I'm having a senior moment right now, but. His performance was so phenomenal and iconic.
Yeah, and it's just like so unsettling, so uncomfortable. And like, you know, it's like I've seen crazy people on the train in New York or even like downtown San Diego that are like just wigging out. And you're like, damn, I don't want them. I don't want to make eye contact with this fool.
Yep.
And they picked him up and he's talking about head cheese. And then he gets kind of mad. And then he's like, yo, here's my, you know, I took a picture of you, $5. And they're like, nah.
That's my favorite scene, by the way, when he opens up his little tinfoil to burn it and then crumbs it up. I just thought that something about that scene just worked. And the way he was stuttering, like he was like, so couldn't get his words out. And he was like. It felt so real.
And he got his feelings hurt. And you felt that when he got his feelings hurt, you felt.
Yes.
It wasn't over the top. Like, you guys hurt my feelings. You know what I'm saying? It was just like.
Real.
In his fucking face.
I was going to say, you know, that was going to be the original title, Head Cheese.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Head Cheese.
And I like that title, too.
That was going to be the original title.
Yeah, but he can't fuck with Texas Chainsaw. That,
right.
It's just, What did you think on that opening scene? How would you, you know. Looking at it back in the old days and then compared to now.
Well, you know what? I look at it as a like a filmmaker. And one thing I noticed about, and I'm sure it's been done a million times, but for 1974, the exposition, the way they dealt with the exposition was over the radio.
Oh.
Brilliant. Right? You don't have to waste time on a scene.
Right.
And I'm looking at
it. You're talking about John Larroquette, the opening crawl? Is that what you mean?
No, I'm talking about on the radio. The
band. I know exactly what you're talking about. After when you hear the dig up the bodies.
Sure. Yeah.
And then you hear the radio.
It's
a
natural way.
And I think it cuts to that windmill. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a smart way and I would guess a cheap way to do it. You don't need actors. You don't need a scene, a setup, light setup, whatever. I don't know if that factored in.
Right.
But like I said, unsettling would be the word for me. But, you know, how did they pull that shot off under the swing when...
I love that shot. That was
girl in the red shorts.
I think they call it Worm's Eye View.
That was pretty dope.
Yeah.
They go under the swing and follow behind her.
Right.
You know, I thought that was...
I would have to imagine they had to put the camera on some sort of wheel track and just push it. I just love it.
Well, that scene is really interesting because there's a couple things going on there for me. And I'm going to tie this into a couple other films, too. Like... Back in that era, I mean, we were in the 70s. Horror was definitely in a change, a transition. And I'm pretty sure it was other films before Texas. But horror was now coming into coming to our homes in a personal way. It was kind of attacking institutions that we took for granted. Right. For example, you know, we'll never look at a beach the same way again after seeing Jaws.
Right.
You know, you got to remember, before Jaws, the beach was a Annette Funicello, Frankie Avalon.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden, Steven Spielberg takes that and turns it upside down on its head.
Right.
I think the same thing, you know, with Halloween, you know,
suburban
neighborhoods. Yeah. You know, you never think the great evil would be lurking. And, right. You know, because you walk down this, that's a really quiet, Cleaver-esque neighborhood.
Right. Last house on the left by Wes Craven.
Same thing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where you look at, you know, you see these little, you know, if
Farmhouse
you
was great.
Yeah,
so
you know, those kind of like those country type houses that are off the side of a road, you know, surrounded by a bunch of grass. They were always kind of a welcoming place, you know, back in the age where, you know, someone, it wasn't uncommon for someone to offer you some lemonade or something on a hot day. And Tobe Hooper completely turned it on its head. Now, also, too, like Mike said, that shot, her back is really interesting because you see her bare back because it's about to be violated.
Right.
And that's really interesting, you know, because she's so vulnerable back there.
Right. Like we said in the first show that I've done with you, it's in my top five of all time. And it's one of my favorite movies just in general. So, you know, and now Texas Chain, when I first, part two, just jump ahead to part two, I wasn't a big fan at first because of it didn't have the tone of Texas Chain 74. It wasn't until like maybe a second or third viewing is when I fell in love with it. And now I'm a big fan. I know Vito loves Texas Chain 2.
Fuck yeah, I do.
So are we officially on Texas 2 now?
Yes, sir. What you got?
Didn't take me two or three times. I loved it from the word jump.
My man!
It's batshit crazy, and that's what it was meant to be.
Right.
Tobe Hooper, I mean, to me, it's the second best out of the entire series.
Right? Yep.
I mean, and if some people put it number one, I could kind of understand. Just like being a big Halloween fan, if someone said, "Well, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a scarier movie," I'm not going to argue with you. But Texas 2 was brilliant.
This is what
Golden Globus Canon Pictures who put it out.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, because you can't redo what he did in the first movie, and I think he realized
that.
That's
when we were saying that. He had to change the tone. He had to go left.
Tobe Hooper was by himself. Remember, Texas was also done by Kim Henkel.
Right.
You know what I mean? He wasn't there in the second one. Tobe Hooper really latched onto the black humor of Texas 1 and really wanted to go full throttle on it at number 2. And again, what was interesting in number 2, it took him a little bit to only make it. It was also put out unrated as well, too.
Right.
And that was something, and that's why it didn't, I don't know if that affected the sales or what it grossed, you know what I mean?
Right.
Overall, but it was one of the few films in modern times, and I say modern times, like about late 80s, because it came out in 87, where it went out without a rating.
Which Texas Chain?
Yeah.
2? I don't remember, because I remember seeing it in the video store, and I'm like, why are they doing the Breakfast Club? You know what I'm saying? And then when I finally rented it, I fell in love with it. You know what I'm saying?
That
like in
does,
the second view.
That does sound familiar that it did come out unrated, because it was pretty gore. I mean, I think that was Savini at...
Savini was at his absolute apex.
Yeah, that was apex right there.
That opening scene, and I was showing it this morning, when he's cutting the car and the dude's head slides off. It's just so perfect.
But let's keep it 100 now. The MVP of that movie was Jim Sidow as Drayton Sawyer. Yeah.
Drayton
had me rolling.
The lines that he drops.
What did he tell? He said, "Are you a bunch of fudge packers? I told you not to hit your brother."
No, when he goes, "Oh, he chopped me in my ass real good." Oh, but he took care of my hands. I don't have to go to the hospital this month.
He said, "Help the hems." He said, "Where's Nubbins there?"
Yeah.
Pardon my French. "Where's that old fuck you, Charlie?" Yeah. Drayton Sawyer had the... I mean, he was... Man, yeah.
Remember the early Popeyes where Popeyes says stuff? And it's like, that's how Drayton reminded me of Popeye. Just the lines you got to catch. You got to have
side,
that
the side talk. The side
the
talk.
The side talk, yeah. You know?
What do you say when my boy Lefty Enright showed up? Boys, you're sitting there done with
you.
He's like, are you from the National... what did he say? He was like, "Are you from the National Food Administration?"
Yeah.
He's like,
"Is that a new health club?" A new health food?
Yeah. American businessman always gets it up the ass.
Don't you come into a man's house singing a song?
Texas 2 is a 100.
He stepped it up in 2. Because 1, he was kind of doing that, and you could see little
hints
of
it. 1 was he was more sinister. He was sinister. He was scary the way he flipped it on her.
Right.
And then he's very sadistic.
Right.
When he would hit her, you know what I mean?
And then he's poking at her while she's there in part 1. When he's driving her to the house.
Like, he got a kick out of it, you know what I mean? And then how he would treat Nubbins when he got mad at him. You know what I mean? Kicking him like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just, here's what, you know, you and I were talking about this too. Now, was Was he the father, or was he the older brother?
No, the older brother. They talk about it in, well, I mean, it's not part of the... No, he says it. Okay, so never mind. Let me go back. Let me backtrack. So when he's tying up a Stretch, mm-hmm. and he's tying up Stretch, and he's like, you know, I had to watch over my brothers, and it caused okay. me to age earlier, and I would have wished this life on a ferret with one eye or whatever the fuck. You know what I'm saying? It says it. He says it right there, and he talks about that they're his younger brothers.
Okay.
So I guess I assume the brother lineage is Drayton, Chop Top, Nubbins, and then Leatherface.
I thought Nubbins was older than Chop Top. We don't know where Chop Top was. Okay, we don't know.
Yeah, he was at Nam.
Okay, so yeah, he wasn't. Okay. So,
yeah, he was at Nam at the time.
Now, were you guys? Did you guys grow up playing with Master of the Universe?
Of course.
Yeah.
Mossman.
That's how you said. Did you know the Mossman was?
You pointed out.
Yeah, Mossman was right there. Yeah. So no, I mean both of those.
Well, which is funny because that was a Canon Pictures, and you remember Canon went on to do the Master of the Universe,
right?
I love Canon. On a side note,
oh yeah,
Canon was like the greatest B movie studio ever because their shit was insane.
OG Gangsters, Golden Globus.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
OG Gangsters, old Golden Globus. I'm taking, you seen Electric Boogaloo?
Oh, I fucking love that movie, dude.
Love that documentary, man. Sorry.
It was the greatest. No, it's cool. You know what made them, and on a side note, what made them so awesome? They had a foreign idea what Hollywood should be, so their movies were kind of slightly off kilter, so it'd be like, what the fuck? But it made sense in the 80s, and for my age, we were like, fuck yeah, this rules.
Right, so Texas Chain is like, to me, what Trauma would have done with the franchise.
Texas Chain
2, sorry. It just reminds me of a Trauma film.
I can see that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it just had that same energy.
With the colors and everything.
Toxic Avenger, the original.
If Trauma was more polished, and I love right. Trauma. I love right. Trauma. But
yeah, it's a total compliment.
Yeah. If Trauma was more polished, yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that about Texas Chain, I think their final girls are super slept on. Like, they don't get enough.
So hot.
They don't get enough love in the when people bring up Final Girls. Well, and I think that Sally was gorgeous. Right. And I think Stretch is super sexy. And then we'll get to the other ones later
right,
on. But
yeah.
Love Stretch.
When we come to the 2022 one, I'll come back around to Sally Hardesty because, yeah, she is like, not a lot of people, you know, are into horror. I mean, well, I'm not going to say a lot, but they're. You got people that just aren't into horror as much as we are. So most people on average probably think Laurie Strode is the original Final right. Girl. And she's not. Laurie Strode was awesome, but Sally Hardesty predated Laurie Strode by 4 years.
And she's a fighter. And a survivor.
Well, I'll say she's a survivor. I wouldn't necessarily say she's a fighter.
The way she broke out of that house, you know what I'm saying?
That's a survivor. That's just
survivor instincts. I guess you're right.
No,
Stretch is more of a fighter than Sally was. Because Stretch is going
Yeah, Stretch fought back.
She's like banging on fucking Chop Top in the stairwell.
Well, and she's taking those knife slashes to the back.
And took the knife slashes while she's getting the chain. Right. So, yeah. Well, Stretch is.
I jokingly say this. You know, I always say one of the things that made Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, so cool was because you had a good old-fashioned, scared-out-of-her-mind woman, and she would do anything to survive.
Right.
And that's what's really cool about it, because she was just trying to survive. She really wasn't trying to fight.
Right.
But, I mean, you got to get... I mean, homegirl jumped straight through a glass window. Yeah. I'd have done the same thing. Like, yeah.
And to build up what Corey said, too...
It's like, let me get out of here.
To build up what you said on that, she conveyed that so well that you... felt her terror.
Yeah.
Like, her performance made you scared.
Yes.
Because it was so real.
Yes.
And it was the way the movie was edited.
Yeah.
If you look at how that movie was edited and her performance, that all built together to where you felt that terror.
The frenetic energy of that table scene in Texas 1, to jump back to Texas 1, can never be duplicated. A lot of movies have tried to get that same energy. It's impossible.
Well, it's because they're trying to recreate something where... You know, Tobe Hooper was already in his mind knowing how he wanted to hit it without any other
thought.
Like
the close-ups on the eyeball. Like, I mean, it's just, to this day, it just makes me unnerved. Right. You know,
sound bites in there, and you just feel that it just, the movie's about insanity.
Yes.
And it's just 50
years old almost, dude. Mm-hmm. The movie's almost fucking 50 years old, dude.
It was innovated.
Yeah.
And it still works. Yeah. It still works.
Yeah. Real quick, on Franklin as being one of the first horror characters that I truly hated.
Your boy Franklin.
Like Franklin, Joey from Friday the 13th, Part 5.
What's his
and
name?
And Old Girl from Halloween, Part 5. Those are my
Dude, I love Tina.
Tina's
the worst, bro.
Right.
You're a Tina fan? Thank you.
You know, again, it goes back to the actress, dude, that conveyed it so well.
No, Franklin's just the biggest. I was so happy when Franklin died.
Right. Even you're a dick.
Yo, Franklin was
a fucking wheelchair.
Well, don't take it on at everybody else. What do you want me to do, bro?
Dude, right, that guy had a hard life. And you're, dude, first of all, he had to go pee and he fell off his wheelchair. Then he gets hacked up. He gets cut by the hitchhiker.
He didn't want to go to begin with, so I feel bad about that. I know.
Oh, that's the only thing you felt bad about? Yeah, yeah. You didn't feel bad how you got his, how you got gutted?
No.
You're a dick.
Yo, he was, yo, I don't know what was Toby, I don't know if it was a 70s thing, the Toby's fascination with, what is it called, raspberries? Like, what is his, he did so many raspberries. Like, come on, Franklin, you have a good time.
Some people do raspberries. Then,
like, oh, yeah, I never want to see raspberries ever again. Was that a 70s thing?
It was a Franklin thing.
I don't know. I mean,
well, no, because even Nubbins later on does raspberries to the cook. And he's like, and he does it and shit.
I do agree with Vito, though. I didn't want to see Franklin. No, you know,
Franklin had to go.
I felt bad for Franklin. That was a hard way to go out, man.
Yeah,
scene, dude, there's no music, no nothing. I know. He just pops up.
Flash
up.
Right. Yeah. And that's the most terrifying thing. The score doesn't tell you how to feel. Right.
No, but they hear something in the background, and you're like, what the fuck are you hearing? Because he heard something. Yes. They were like,
sure.
He's like, slow down, Taylor.
Right.
Yeah, and you hear something, and you're like, is that dead moment of silence? And here he pops up, and he's like, you know?
Yeah.
But we capitalize on what Mike said, too. Even the score is unsettling, the original.
Sure.
Dan.
Yeah, it's iron or whatever.
Yeah, it's more
scraping.
Like noise than actual music. Was.
Yes. And it conveys insanity.
Yeah, it's trying to get on your nerves. Sorry.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's
no, I love it. I mean, it's, you know.
Even though I do like part two. That's so cool.
That opening scene, dude, with the two yuppies, dude, I still love that.
Yeah, that's cool, but that's a different take. I mean, I know that was before all the others, but it wasn't four people in a van. You know, it was just these two cats, you know.
My favorite one. It took place in the 80s, too, so it was attacking. Right. I mean, it was probably the first movie to kind of attack yuppie culture, and then a year later we got RoboCop, which, you know, totally attacked yuppie culture.
Right.
So
Texas Chain 2 is brilliant. Now Texas 3, I didn't see it